The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
The mayor showed up in court as a character witness for a 14-year-old offender during sentencing. The teen robbed three women in separate incidents with a fake gun, stealing their cars and belongings. The victims told Fox 8 they were traumatized by what happened, and then they felt victimized all over again when the mayor showed up in support of the young criminal.
I was in shock. She wasn't there for us. She was there for the assaultant and his mother, and it felt like she was supporting the crime.
Juvenile judge Renard Darensberg sentenced the juvenile to a 3-year suspended sentence, meaning no jail time.
17-year-old John Honore, 16-year-old Brania Baker, and 15-year-olds Markel Curtis and Linraya Theophile will be tried as adults on second-degree murder charges. Police say that the teens carjacked Linda Fricky in Mid-City back in March. Fricky was beat and then dragged outside of her car until her arm was eventually severed from her body. She then bled to death in the middle of the street.
Carjackings in Philly, a crime that's been exploding over the last several months. And according to Philly police numbers released to Steve Keeley by a source, it's getting worse. From January 1st of this year through July 31st, a police source says there have been 757 carjackings citywide. There were roughly 850 carjackings in all of 2021. The latest sourced police statistics show that the majority of these carjackings, more than 500, happened at gunpoint and also happened while the victims were at their parked cars.
There's a carjacked car.
Yep.
Chicago's
on it. We got eyes on it.
One of the passengers in the stolen SUV eventually fled. When police caught him, they discovered he was 17 years old, released to his mother. Sadly, he's not the youngest suspect that members of the carjacking task force have seen.
A well-known 11-year-old.
That have been in contact with police before?
Yes.
An 11-year-old was arrested in Chicago as part of a carjacking crew, and it was not his first time.
Auto theft just occurred now, 60 East 23rd, child's in the car.
The frantic father reports his car stolen.
Somebody jumped into his black Audi Q7 with a dealer plate, his child is in the car.
Detroit police arrested an 11, 12, and 14-year-old for stealing high-end Hellcats off the Jefferson North lot.
They think it's fun. You know, they think it's fun, and there's no penalty to it.
Head of the Detroit Police Commercial Auto Theft Unit, Lieutenant Clive Stewart, stunned over the trio of kids arrested Monday right here on the storage lot of the Jefferson North plant. In a separate incident, this kid, just 14 years old, an alleged repeat carjacker, arrested this weekend. He was out on bond from a carjacking in May. Then last week, police say he jacked two cars on the city's east side the same night.
Carjacking caught on camera. Witnesses keeping their distance as a homeless man punches a street vendor, then steals his van. The street vendor was carjacked by a homeless man over the weekend. Esteban says he'd even seen his attacker before and that he had never had a problem with him, adding that he gave the man food shortly before he punched him in the face.
All those local reports there appearing in Tucker Carlson's opening monologue last night, Tucker's team pulling together these reports that you're now seeing all over the country. This is America today. These are the cities. Make a chain, says the prophet Ezekiel. The violence, it connects from one violent act to the next, from one violent city to the next. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live audio stream through CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on that platform. On our platform, you get to our very own video stream of this show, so you can see the beautiful studio here in Edmond, Oklahoma, all the literature that we hold up, and of course the the clips that we have to play for you every day as well. That's at thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live, and it takes you right to our live stream page every day, every weekday morning, 11 a.m. here in the Central Time Zone of the United States. Yesterday we talked about the beginning of the end for the Roman Empire, and how that all of these problems caused Rome to turn inward, even as the barbarians were circling about on the perimeter. And we're seeing the collapse of a great nation, certainly the most powerful, the single most powerful and prosperous nation in the history of the United States, sorry, in the history of the world, speaking of the United States, all of it covered. I was thinking of Mr. Armstrong's book as I said that, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. It's all laid out there. It's all there in that book. The prophesied rise and fall of a great nation. And it is difficult to watch. I mean, it's in so many ways, as you well know, if you listen to this program, we're witnessing the communist takeover of so many agencies of government in this land, and at the same time, just total anarchy on the streets of America's cities. Judges 21 and verse 25, every man just doing what seems right in his own eyes. All of these flash mobs just running into 7-Eleven to clear the shelves of bubble gum and candy, or hitting the liquor store, filling up duffel bags with alcohol, and just walking out. It's just now routine. That's why a lot of drugstores and supermarkets and convenience stores are just closing up or moving out of places like San Francisco. It's from the Wall Street Journal. 22 U.S. cities found that the number of homicides in 2021 was 44% higher than in 2019. 44%! Just comparing 2021 to 2 years earlier. 44%? It says here, according to Gallup, 80% of Americans worry about crime and 53% worry a great deal. See a lot of these cities where crime is just rampant. These are also the hardest places to get a weapon for yourself, to protect yourself, because these Democrat mayors, these Democrat governors, they don't want the law-abiding citizens to have firearms. But what about these criminals, these thugs? And did you notice how many of them are in their teens? They get a slap on the wrist for carjacking, and then they're right back on the streets. No jail time in so many cases. No jail time, no bail money needed. Just a slap on the wrist, right back on the street, so that they can continue with their criminal acts. And coming out from, as Tucker rightly pointed out last night, coming out from, in nearly every case, a fatherless home. No, we're seeing the breakdown of the traditional family. And this is something Herbert Armstrong prophesied decades ago, well over a half century ago. I can give you the quotes from The Missing Dimension in Sex, or before that, God Speaks Out on the New Morality. That was from the 1960s. And Mr. Armstrong said, this breakdown of the family, I mean, this poses a greater threat than a nuclear bomb. And look at now what's happening. Tomorrow's News Today says here, the rise in crime is largely the byproduct of far-left criminal justice and policing reforms that Democratic cities and states have adopted over the past few years. It's just gotten so much worse just in the past few years. Evil men and seducers just wax worse and worse and worse. I mean, think of a mayor. I think it was the example from that montage that Tucker pulled together. Think of a mayor, I think it was in New Orleans, going to a trial to plead for the criminal. To plead that the judge would go soft on the criminal. And the victims are there shocked. This is our city representative? This is the woman that's presiding over our city? She's there pleading. She's a special pleader for the criminals in court even. What about the victims? How many people in America are being murdered by someone that a judge just let out of jail? Gavin Newsom bragged about it. Yeah, we released thousands of criminals. How's that working out for California? sweeping changes just in the last few years. Much of the increase in crime has come in solidly Democratic cities like Los Angeles, San Francisco, and New York. This Journal piece goes on and says that there's a chance Lee Zeldin, you know, the one that almost got stabbed to death at a rally in New York, there's a chance that he, as a Republican, might win the senatorial seat. I mean, that would be a shock coming out of New York. But people are so, 80% of Americans are concerned about this. And the radical left, the communist left, they could care less. They're too busy going after grandma. The DOJ is too busy going after grandma who took a selfie. This is Larry Elder. He was on Tucker a few nights ago. Listen to what he says. Clip 8.
The second big theme, of course, is soft on crime policies, soft on crime governors like the one in California, soft on crime DAs. Gavin Newsom bragged during COVID that he released 8,000 convicted felons. Some of them were violent offenders, Tucker, and the odds are that at least half of them are going to reoffend. You have these soft on crime policies like Proposition 47 that allows you to steal $950, not just a day, but per store, and if you get caught, they write you a ticket as a misdemeanor, and you don't go to jail because you got cashless bail. Proposition 57 that allows a bunch of categories of crime to be called nonviolent, and they include assault on a police officer. I kid you not. That's nonviolent. Serial arson, nonviolent. Rape of an intoxicated victim, nonviolent. And as a result, you're finding a greater chance that the bad guy doesn't get caught. And when the bad guy knows he's not going to get caught, crime goes up. If he knows he's not going to get convicted, crime goes up. If he knows he's not going to get incarcerated, crime goes up. They may be crooks, but they're not stupid. And finally, the one that few people like to talk about, and you mentioned it in the monologue, is the breakdown of the family. You said their parents, plural, are not telling them not to steal. That assumes that there are two parents. Often it is the parent or the grandparent. 40% of all kids in America today enter the world, Tucker, without a father married to the mother.
Total breakdown of the foundation of our society. And leaders in society have been pushing this, accommodating this with government handouts and celebrating the bizarre and the twisted and the perverse, the upside-down family. And now, I mean, we're reaping what we've sown. He mentioned the cashless bail policies. Fox News says a California district attorney has found that more than 70% of criminal suspects released on $0 bail between 2020 and 21 in his county committed new crimes. They let him out, and 70% of them go on to commit new crimes. And so ordinary Americans are holing up in their house after dinner time, bolting the doors shut, and keeping, if they have a firearm, keeping it near their bedside. It says here, the California Judicial Council in April 2020 implemented the statewide emergency bail schedule, or $0 bail, which supporters say makes the criminal justice system more fair for those who cannot afford to get released. You see, it's all about fairness and justice for the criminals, not the victims, the criminals. It says the California Judicial Council rescinded its $0 bail order in June 2020, but some counties kept the policy in place. Yolo County ended its zero bail policy in June 2021, according to a press release. Further on, it says, of the 595 individuals released on $0 bail between 2020 and 21 in Yolo County, 420 of 595, 420 or 70.6% were arrested for new crimes, and 123 or 20% were arrested for a violent crime such as murder, attempted murder, kidnapping, robbery, carjacking, or domestic violence. And a lot of them, as you heard in the montage, they're teenagers. And the judges go, well, he's just 14. And he just he's only guilty of carjacking 1, 2, 3, or 4 times. And so they're back out on the streets. And of course, following George Floyd, we had to defund the police. There was a case of police brutality in Arkansas just a few days ago. Hardly even makes the news. I mean, there's actually a serious case
of police brutality, but unless it fits right with it, the victim, of course, is white. So forget about it. Move on. But George Floyd, I mean, everything, the whole system needs to, the whole system needs to be torn down. We got to go after the police, except for the Capitol Police, on one day in a moment of time, January 6, 2021. Aside from that, unless it's the Capitol Police on Jan 6 or your FBI, the police state, we are against law enforcement. And so they're dismantling the system in a lot of these places. Defunding police. Police, they no longer have the resources to go after gangs. To split apart these gangs that have teenagers doing, the teenagers are out front because they're the least likely to be penalized. So they hijack the car. They take off with it. If they get caught, they'll be back in the gang, back out on the street in days. $0 bail. Wow. This is from the Daily Mail. It says, New York City thug, 55. Here's a case of one who's not a teenager. He's just a career criminal. 55, who put on gloves to knock out a diner in an unprovoked attack, is freed after being arrested for attempted murder as the district attorney charges him with a misdemeanor. They left the victim in a coma with a fractured skull 3 years after leaving prison for rape. So he was in prison for rape. He gets out. Then he goes and starts cracking skulls, literally. And then he's out on bail. Zero bail. Well, I don't know how much. It was another slap on the wrist. That's what it amounts to. Just let him go back out on the streets. Can you understand why there's a lot of Americans who are terrified? Not even just about the potential for having their car stolen or getting sucker punched from behind. But they're looking, in the broader sense, they're looking at their nation saying that this is unsustainable. This cannot go on or everything explodes. It's like that quote I gave to you from the Ezekiel booklet by my father. That you look around and you just know there's a big explosion coming. Request that if you like. Ezekiel, God's end time prophet as well. I mean, God's prophets have warned us. The toll-free number is 1-866-930-3024. Request that and any of the other books I mentioned, of course, yesterday that we finally received. The new printed edition of America Under Attack, full-length book, wonderful, beautiful quality, by the way. But how many pages in this? 280, counting some of the indexing and appendixes and things of that nature in the back. Just a powerful message. Powerful, powerful message. As I say, the call is paid for by us as well, if you live in the U.S. and Canada. Or the Caribbean. Listen to, again, just to reiterate that point we made yesterday on the show. Well, all that was happening in Rome, right there at the very end, as they were committing suicide, basically, the Roman Empire, the powerful, the mighty Roman Empire, committing suicide. Now listen to what Tucker said on his show last night, clip one.
Turns out the symptoms of societal decay are universal. They're not unique to a specific society. You recognize them in any country at any time, now or 1,000 years ago. Always the same. The men become weak, the leaders get decadent, law enforcement gets politicized, the currency gets devalued, and then things begin to come apart. Pretty soon, doesn't take long, the society can no longer perform its most basic function. The reason we have societies in the first place, which is to protect the weak from the strong.
So many are news gatherers every day, one of them commenting today about just how all of the stories, the headlines, just show that there's this breakdown of law and order. It shows more and more, it exposes the communist infiltration and attack. Well before anybody had heard of Barack Obama. Go back and look at, speaking of my father's booklets, go back and look at No Freedom Without Law and consider what my father was writing about 20 years ago following the attempted election steal,
by the radical Democrats. They attempted to steal it in 2000, just 22 years ago. 2 years ago, they did do it. They pulled it off. And now they don't talk about the machines. Only Mike Lindell does. He had some speeches this past weekend, by the way, on the theft. Well, hopefully we can get to that in a coming program. But here, 22 years ago, they attempted to pull off a steal of a presidential election. And my father pointed out in No Freedom Without Law that, look, if you start drifting toward lawlessness, if there's no supreme law of the land, everything breaks down. That's what we were warning back in the early 2000s. Barack Obama comes along in 2008. Wow, Satan had everything set up just so, as he's ripping apart our society from within. He's ripping apart this nation, and you see it in the cities. You see it in law enforcement having their hands tied. You see it in the ones that are just let out of jail and the ones that are sent off to jail for who knows how long. Paul Pelosi, I mean, all that video that came out. After the plea bargain is reached, after it's all said and done, just like Jesse Waters said on his show last night, now the police come forward and say, okay, I guess you can see the footage of him drunk and the footage of the damage to the vehicles and how that all, someone almost died. But we're just going to give him a slap on the wrist. After all, it's Nancy Pelosi's husband. I mean, he's a millionaire. He's rich and powerful. Any other person in that same situation, they're going off to prison for a number of years, probably. But not Paul Pelosi. Fox says, the multimillionaire husband of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi pleaded guilty to driving under the influence and causing injury yesterday in connection to drunk driving charges back in May. Pelosi's plea agreement includes a jail term of 5 days, although Judge Joseph Tsolga noted that he already had credit for 4 days, two from the actual time served and two for conduct credits. The remaining day will be covered by an 8-hour work program. So 2 days in jail. And the judge thought 5 days was just a little bit too much. I mean, he's had spectacular conduct in jail. So let him out. Let him out. He's a radical Democrat. Why not? Meanwhile, you have the DOJ on this Gretchen Whitmer case. The ones that were entrapped by the FBI, a jury acquitted them. Then there's a hung jury on two of the individuals. And the DOJ, instead of just going away quietly, saying, well, we don't want to reveal ourselves too much here as being part of the plot, they designed the plot. They set up the extremist group club. They recruited ordinary Americans to go after Whitmer in a kidnapping and murder attempt. And they were exposed in these courts of law. And yet the media, your corporate media, could care less that the FBI was behind this. And for Governor Whitmer to come out yesterday and to congratulate the courtroom, the judge, and how that justice has been done, and she's basically congratulating the very people that set up these Americans. You know, thanks to the DOJ for staying with this after the hung jury. And now they got their convictions. Oh, yes. Now they're going to send two ordinary Americans. Maybe they're a little bit off in their thinking, but sent to jail for attempted murder? Yeah, you got to put them in jail for sure. This is justice. This is what justice looks like in Obama's America. Julie Kelly wrote this. A federal judge today convicted two men charged with conspiring to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer in 2020. The verdict is a much-needed win for the regime in a case the Justice Department considers one of the most important domestic terror investigations in decades. That's what it is. It's a much-needed win for Merrick Garland's DOJ. Justice in Obama's America.
fundamental transformation. Kelly says legal observers bristled at the one-day jury selection process handled almost exclusively by U.S. District Judge Robert Jonker, who also presided over the first trial. On the first day of testimony, defense attorneys informed the court that one juror was potentially compromised for telling co-workers that he had already decided the case and intended to ensure a particular result at the conclusion of the trial. Jonker met, this is the judge, he met privately with the juror and refused to allow earlier prosecutors or defense counsel from participating in the meeting. He ordered all related filings to remain under seal. Just keep it quiet. Let's keep it on the down low. Oh, there's a jury member that's already decided before the case even gets going. Well, I'll have a chat with them back in the chambers. And we'll sort this out. But let him stay on the jury. Justice in Obama's America. This is what it looks like. And then you have, of course, the unconstitutional, the lawless, and criminal raid on President Donald Trump's house in Mar-a-Lago. There was the report yesterday. Well, of course, we talked about John Solomon's revelations from Monday night and how that the White House was behind this operation from the beginning. The White House instigated it. The White House ordered it. And then now you have the National Archives publishing exchanges between the White House, what they've had with the White House. Again, further exposing that this was a political hit job. And it's not even over yet. I mean, the FBI, they're there still sifting through the documents. Anything from 2017 to 2021, we got to take it on orders from the White House. Unbelievable. The National this is from the letter is from May 2020. It's from the acting archivist, Deborah Steidel-Wall. She wrote this to Donald Trump's attorneys. She said, NARA, that's the archives agency, informed the Department of Justice about that discovery, the initial batch of documents, that there may have been some classified, and of course, this is what the media zeroes in on. Classified, espionage. They just throw these terms out there. They know most people. They know, it's like my father says in America Under Attack. They try to make it complicated enough to where they know most people, they just won't look into it. So they just throw out classified. They throw out hundreds. They throw out espionage in the hope that you'll believe, wow, maybe Donald Trump is the traitor here. Maybe it's okay to have a police state. Maybe it's okay for a president, a fake one at that, to unleash his DOJ like a pack of rabid dogs to go after Donald Trump and his wife and her wardrobe. It says here, NARA informed the Department of Justice about the discovery, which prompted the department to ask the president to request that NARA provide the FBI with access to the boxes at issue so that the FBI and others in the intelligence community could examine them. Now, again, where is the crime? NARA's having this communication with Trump's attorneys, and they're cooperating. They gave him 15 boxes back in January or February. So NARA says, hey, there might be some sensitive information in here, so we're consulting with the White House over getting more documents. Listen to this. It says, the counsel to the president has informed me that in light of the particular circumstance presented here, President Biden defers to my determination in consultation with the Attorney General for the Office of Legal Counsel regarding whether I should uphold the former president's purported protective assertion of executive privilege. So here's some woman at the archives, the National Archives, getting to decide whether or not Donald Trump, the former president, just president 2 seconds ago, she gets to decide whether or not Donald Trump can claim executive privilege. This says here, she wrote in the letter, I have therefore decided, this is Steidel-Wall, I have therefore decided not to honor the former president's protective claim of privilege. I've decided I have more authority, and I can decide if privilege counts in this case or not, and whether or not Trump and his attorneys can claim. Can you imagine anyone saying anything, even remotely close to this about the former president Barack Hussein Obama. Can you imagine anyone beating down Obama's door saying, you know what, we need these documents, and I've decided over here at the National Archives, that's right, I have decided that you can't claim executive privilege. You can't claim attorney-client privilege. You just can't do it. But see, anybody and their dog can do it to Donald Trump. It says here, Seidel Wall said, accordingly, NARA will provide the FBI access to the records in question as required by the incumbent president beginning as early as Thursday, May 12, 2022. This is all from months ago. So they were talking about it. They were planning it. What about those nuclear codes? If you knew all this back in April and May, you're going to wait until August 8th to conduct the raid? You just see the web of lies throughout. All of these people know, as I said yesterday, they have no legal leg to stand on. They know it's unconstitutional. They know it's politically motivated. They know the DOJ has been weaponized. And they know, they all know, that the corporate media will rush to their defense and say, as I played for you yesterday, you know, really, the victim here is Joe Obama and the government of the United States. The victim here is the DOJ and the FBI because they have to play by rules and Donald Trump doesn't. And Donald Trump is popular on Truth Social. You think people are really, you think their trust in government is really growing stronger in just looking at some of these topics I'm giving to you today? Listen to Greg Jarrett. He was on with Hannity last night. Fox News, clip four.
Well, and the other difference is that there was overwhelming evidence of intent on Hillary Clinton's part. And the statutes that she violated and should have been prosecuted under used terms like knowingly and intentionally and deliberately. Well, she certainly did that.
He's comparing all the documents that Hillary Clinton knew were classified. She knew it was illegal. She knew that by destroying it all, she was obstructing justice. And Jim Comey knew it all as well. He said she knowingly did all that. And did she ever see one day in jail? She saw less time in jail than Paul Pelosi, who nearly killed someone because he was drunk. He was drunk driving. Listen to Greg Jarrett as he talks now about the Mar-a-Lago raid, clip five.
So what did Merrick Garland do? He tossed in three general criminal statutes. Well, wait a minute. Under law for more than 100 years in America, a specific statute like the Records Act takes precedent and supersedes any general statutes. And again, Garland knew that, but he wanted to gain access to Trump's compound for an ulterior motive, to look for some evidence, any evidence of a different crime, maybe something related to January 6th. So he tossed out a general warrant, which is a clear violation of the Fourth Amendment, which requires it to be specific. This wasn't. And the magistrate should never have signed it. And I bet he has a bit of buyer's remorse now, which is probably the reason why he wants to divulge the contents of the affidavit, because maybe that shows not only lies and misrepresentations, but omissions about how the president had actually been cooperating and how a subpoena should have been used instead of a warrant.
On that last bit there, you've got reports today. Sam sent it to me right before the show. The corporate media saying that Trump and his people, they just weren't cooperating. That's why they had to conduct the raid. And so now we're to that. There was cooperation all throughout. This is a rogue agency. This is what the Obama police state looks like. This is from Real Clear Politics, an article showing that all these things may be happening because of just how desperate the radical left is, because it knows it's being exposed. It says here, the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago represents the logical next step in the left's ongoing effort to destroy Donald Trump. I mean, you've heard this before from us, from Sundance, from others. It says here, the raid also evinces Democrats' spiral of worry
A successful Trump return, once unthinkable to them, is looking more possible by the day. To stop it, Democrats and their anti-Trump Republican allies are prepared to shred every last norm of American due process. And then came the raid and the raid in Palm Beach, it says further down. For the first time in our nation's history, Americans saw government agents with guns at the behest of a sitting president's Justice Department. Again, the White House ordered this. Keep that in mind. And rummaged through the former First Lady's wardrobe, all supposedly to seize classified documents from Trump's administration. Of course, Trump could have declassified any of the documents at issue while president if he chose to do so. But as Andrew McCarthy argues in the New York Post, this isn't about classified documents anyway. The raid was likely just a pretext to further the January 6 investigation. Certainly, it was a continuation of the effort to discredit and remove Donald Trump forever. Finally, it says here, expect such actions to continue and worsen. Because as Donald Trump increases his popularity in polls and as Joe Biden takes the hit for the raid, even for those that can see through all of this, but certainly for the ailing economy, the wide open border, the billions and billions that they just can't seem to stop sending to Ukraine. I mean, it's like every other day there's another package, billions of dollars. Just sending billions and billions offshore. Even as you see the crime rampant in our streets, and as you see local law enforcement understaffed, they have no help. America has no helper. That's what 2 Kings 14 is all about. Crime, make a chain. The bloody crimes just go from one link to the next. Oh, we sent out a trumpet brief last night, by the way. All roads lead to Barack Obama. The opening line there. No one will say it, but it's becoming more and more obvious every day. This is not Joe Biden's first presidential term. This is Barack Obama's third. This is Obama's third term. All the roads lead to him. And then following that trumpet brief from last night, you've got this story from Just the News. Another one from John Solomon's group. How Barack Obama set the legal path for the FBI's Trump raid. So here again, imagine this. Barack Obama, he has his fingerprints on what the DOJ has been able to get away with because of fundamentally transforming the United States, as he said he would before he even came into office in 2009. Just the News says here, in the decade after September 11 terror attacks, Sue wouldn't have had such wide latitude. An executive order that George W. Bush signed in 2001 declared that an incumbent president couldn't overrule a former president's claims to executive privilege over documents from their tenure if the two could not come to an agreement. So if a president leaves, the new one coming in can't come in and just say, no, that's not executive privilege. You give me those documents. The one that's leaving office has some rights as well. So even some rights to those documents. Certainly a right to not have his home broken into by FBI goons. It says here, if under the standards set forth in Section 4 below, the incumbent president, well, it just basically goes and shows what George W. Bush put in motion to just make sure there was fairness and justice when it comes to all of these presidents and all of these former presidents, to make sure they're all treated the same way. Bush's order added for emphasis, absent compelling circumstances, the incumbent president will concur in the privileged decision of the former president. And then listen to this, but Barack Obama reversed that guidance nearly a decade later, going back to the Watergate and Reagan-era guidance that the incumbent president had a final say over past presidents and acted through the National Archivist. The incumbent president, if I get in, Obama said, and he took action on this right away in his first term, but he basically says, if I get in, look, I'm the one who has final say over what George Bush or anyone else might say or might have said. It says here, Barack Obama reversed the guidance nearly a decade later, going back Well, I read that. It says, in making the determination referred to in subsection A of this section, the archivist shall abide by any instructions given him by the incumbent president or his designee unless otherwise directed by a final court order, Obama's order, dated January 21, 2009. January 21? He took care of this the day after he came into office. This was important to him. He was coming in, again, the tides were going to shift because of him. He was going to save the world, not just the United States. Fundamentally transform the United States of America and save the world in the process. Absolutely, you see some real parallels here with the man of sin spoken of in 2 Thessalonians 2. I mean, he comes in saying, basically, by his actions, I'm God. I have final say here. All roads lead to Obama. Says here, Trump never changed that guidance during his presidency. You see, in the corporate media, they're all saying it was Trump who was the tyrant. Really? Did Trump go after all those AP reporters? Did Trump unleash the IRS on his political opponents? Did Donald Trump send the FBI into Barack Obama's mansion in Washington, D.C., or Martha's Vineyard, or whichever mansion you want to go to? None of that happened. Is Barack Obama, has he ever come under any investigation? He's worth $500 million. All roads lead to Obama. January 21st, 2009. The archivist shall notify the incumbent and former presidents of his determination at least 30 days prior to the disclosure of the presidential record. Trump never changed it. Further on, it says here, once the Biden White House cleared the way, the FBI and Justice Department moved speedily to escalate their investigation, impaneling a grand jury in May and issuing a subpoena to Trump, visiting his home on June 3rd, and eventually raiding the home with a criminal search warrant on August 8th. In other words, Obama's order opened the door to the now infamous Trump raid. Obama's order. It opened the way. It opened the door. It's as our trumpet brief pointed out last night. All roads lead to Barack Hussein Obama. If you don't subscribe to that daily email blast, you can get a subscription to it at our website. That's thetrumpet.com or thetrumpet.com. I was going to say /live. That's how you get to the live stream. And to get to our literature, America Under Attack, U.S. and Britain in Prophecy, just call our operators today. Toll free if you're in the United States, Canada. The number is 1-866-930-3024. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
One third of your Bible is prophecy, and 90% of it is for our time today. This is why, when you study Bible prophecy, you often read statements like, in that day, in the last days, and at the time of the end. Biblical prophecy is what makes the Bible so relevant to today, so essential to understanding our modern world. Most people, even in the world of religion, assume that nations like Britain, America, Germany, Russia, and China are not mentioned in Bible prophecy. But if prophecy is mainly for our time today, how could the Bible ignore some of the most powerful and prominent nations of today? The key to understanding prophecy is knowing the biblical identities of modern nations. Learn about these identities in Herbert W. Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. In this book, you will learn about the astonishing identity of the American and British people in biblical prophecies. Request your free copy today. The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
The Trumpet Daily.
More and more, you're just seeing clear-thinking commentators pointing out just how worthless the education is at the university level. Young people from all over the country just heading into some of these universities where, you know, the label might be prestigious, but then you have a look at the courses that they offer, and what our young people, our children, are being fed, the propaganda, the anti-Americanism, the hatred for the institutional norms, for fundamentals, for founding documents. God says that the way to true education is by reasoning with Him, by reasoning out of the Scriptures. This is what we've focused a little on in the last couple of studies. Come, let us reason together, Isaiah 1 and verse 18. I mentioned the passage in Acts yesterday, Acts 17, verses 1 and 2, where it says that Paul reasoned with them out of the Scriptures. I can give you a few more to add to your notebook. 1 Peter 3 and verse 15, it says there that we've got to be ready always to give an answer to every man that asks you a reason of the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. We've just got to be ready to answer. We've got to be ready to respond. We've got to be ready to give God's perspective. We've got to be ready to teach. We've got to be ready to teach our children. We've got to put time, we've got to know the truth in order to be set free from the captivity, the bondage that this world is in, a world held captive. That was one of the last booklets Mr. Armstrong ever wrote. Wrote it in the same year that he penned Mystery of the Ages. This world is in bondage to the devil, and the only way out is through the truth. A web of lies is not going to extract us from this position of slavery. Acts 18 and verse 2, again, Acts 18 and verse 4, Paul reasoned in the synagogue and persuaded the Jews and Greeks. He reasoned. He did it on the Sabbath day, by the way. I guess that's another subject or topic that we can get into later. But so much, I mean, you can see the value that we put on searching the Scriptures daily like the Bereans did there in Acts 17 with just all the literature that we make available. Search the Scriptures. That's what all of our books and booklets help you to do. Our Bible correspondence course, by the way, I haven't plugged that in a while, but what a valuable study to go in depth into the Word of God, to search the Scriptures, to dig up all of these gold mines of information and truth. That's what this world needs. That's what would solve the problems of this world. This is what would solve the runaway, out-of-control crime in all of America's cities. It's happening all over the world. You look at it and you know, as the Ezekiel booklet brings out, you know an explosion is coming. Wisdom and understanding comes from God. God is our lawgiver. He's the author of these laws, these rules that we study. Notice Proverbs 2. This is verse 1. It says, "My son, if you will receive my words and hide my commandments with you, so that you incline your ear unto wisdom and apply your heart to understanding." Verse 3 says, "Yes, if you cry after knowledge and lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver," it says, "and search for her as for hid treasures," verse 5 says, "then shall you understand the fear of the Eternal and find the knowledge of God." You're not going to find God's knowledge. You're not going to find God's truth unless you're willing to seek, diligently seek after it. Verse 6 says, "For the Lord gives wisdom. Out of His mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He lays up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly." There's that Psalm 119, where it talks about, you know, the prophet says, "I have more wisdom than my instructors, than my teachers." And we tell our young people that not to make them get vain or self-confident. We just say, if you delve into the Word of God in a humble yet diligent search for God's truth, you're going to have more understanding and common sense and wisdom and discernment than any of the educators of today. The educators of today, I mean, they're just filling the minds of young people with propaganda, with all kinds of deviant lifestyles. Yeah, go ahead, get into anything. And more parents are now awakened to this attack. You see some of the primary results in Florida. They had quite a few local elections on the school boards, and quite a few of these communists have been voted out. And of course, the corporate media is sounding the alarm as if the United States is under attack from parents. It's the parents who are coming under attack. It's Donald Trump who's come under attack. It's these two guys in Michigan that were set up by the FBI. They're the ones being penalized. It's exactly as Tucker pointed out in his monologue last night. I mean, these are the final silly stages of a complete and total breakdown of the entire nation. Only God could save us temporarily. Only God could do anything about something this bad, something this wretched. Look at Proverbs 8. This is verse 1. It says, "Does not wisdom cry and understanding put forth her voice?" Verse 2 says, "She stands in the top of high places, by the way of the places of the path. She cries at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in at the doors. Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of man." It says in verse 5, "O you simple, understand wisdom, and you fools, be you of an understanding heart." I mean, God calls the lowly, like it says in 1 Corinthians 1, but we don't have to stay there. We can't stay there. We have to receive an education for the royal positions that God wants to put us in. We've got to draw on the strength and the power of God to open our minds to this precious truth and to just fill our minds with the words of God. "Man shall not live by bread alone," said Jesus, "but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God." That's what we live on. That's what we consume every day. It's like food. Physical food. It's spiritual food. It gives us sustenance and good health, spiritually speaking. Verse 6 says, "Hear, for I will speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things. For my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips." When God opens his mouth, he speaks truth. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing froward or perverse in them. Well, there's certainly a lot that's froward and perverse in the daily discourse of our world, but not with God. Not with God. It says in verse 9, "They are all plain to him that understands, and right to them that find knowledge." It says, "Receive my instruction," verse 10, "and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold." It's more precious than silver and gold. Verse 11 says, "For wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it." It says, "I, wisdom, dwell with prudence." It's as if wisdom's personified here. "I dwell with prudence and find out knowledge of witty inventions. The fear of the eternal is to hate evil, pride and arrogancy, and the evil way and the froward mouth do I hate." It says finally, and we'll conclude with this, verse 14, "Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength." You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, we'd love to hear from you. TD@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you tomorrow.